Click kaya959.co.za to download the Kaya Biz podcast.
You're listening to Kaya Biz here on Kaya 959. Now, tonight's conversation is a rather special one as we are reflecting on customer experience and what that really means for individuals like you and I, especially when it comes to one of the most important resources we've come to live with, that is digital inclusion. But what does that mean and what does it look like specifically when it comes to a company like MTN? One that has really player in providing digital services to many of us as South Africans. But what moves are they making to make sure number one customer commitment is really something that we get to experience? To tell us more, we are joined in studio for this conversation by the General Manager of Branded Retail and Business Experience Hubs for MTN South Africa, Mengiana Ranku. Such a pleasure to have you with us, ma'am.
Thank you. Good evening, Gugu, and good evening to your listeners.
I'm excited to see you and to speak to you tonight. And funny enough, I keep thinking of the various taglines we've heard from MTN, whether it's Yellow Summer or everywhere you go, But the truth is, for many of us, when it comes to data connectivity, our cell phones, we always just want to ensure that our customer experience is something that's prioritized and that it's seamless. I am aware that today is day one of International Customer Service Week, but help us contextualize from an MTN South Africa perspective. What does that mean and how do you implement it?
Thank you, Gugu. So for us at MTN South Africa, Customer Service Week, it's not just a celebration. It's global, but it's very personal. It's very personal for us because it's just a time where we get to pause, reflect on how far we've come as a brand and how far we still want to go.
And maybe let's talk about that, right? Because MTN has really been a brand that's been in the country for quite some time. I'm sidestepping here, yes, but just to provide you with an opportunity to really give us more depth around what, more than 30 years of experiencing MTN in South Africa. There's been some phenomenal gains that we've made since then.
Yes, I mean, we are really proud as MTN Group and MTN South Africa. I mean, it's been 30 years. I mean, coming into the country in 1994, we are a true democracy brand, and we are actually a true African brand. I mean, if you think about the stature of MTN South Africa, coming from South Africa and going into the rest of Africa, I mean, today we are the number one African, you know, operator. Mm-hmm. So we're really proud, and we just want to thank the South Africans. I mean, they've been there supporting us. We are where we are today because of the support we've received from our customers.
Yeah, far-reaching coverage. And maybe if we link that back to the customer experience, as you say, more than two decades of prioritizing customer experience as a key strategy and campaign. But how has it evolved? Help us understand what some of the nuances are that we can reflect on over the last two decades.
Sure, we've actually evolved extensively as a brand. If you think about back in the days when you first got your mobile, it was just about being able to make a call, sending that SMS,
yeah,
and that's it. When you had issues, you would actually call the call center,
yes,
or go into what we used to call service centers. So now customers are actually even demanding way more. We are operating in a digital environment where customers now, they want to decide where to actually get their services, be it self-service, or they want to get it online, or they want to go into the store. So we've really evolved to a space where we are putting digital first, we are putting our customers first, because customers are actually even getting more sophisticated. They want speed, they,
yeah,
want simplification, they actually looking for personalization as well. So it is quite different to many years ago.
Yeah, I'm glad you touched on the customer experience centers, because I understand that that's shifts not entirely, because from a retail point of view, if anyone does have to go into your stores, there is still a sense of participating in the experience hub. Tell us more, yes, about that and what that looks like.
Look, I mean, as MTN South Africa, we actually have a mantra which is centered around three promises. Mm-hmm. The three promises we have is we listen, we care, and we make moves. This is around, you know, when you walk into our experience centers, one that we have actually is not far from here, is in Morningside, which we launched late last year,
okay,
which is around, you know, making sure that customers can walk in and experience the digital world. You know, when you walk into that store, there is, you get to experience some of the gaming devices that are out there. You get to experience IoT. So, and the agents that we have in that stores are truly understanding the digital world, and they are there to service all our customers.
Give us an example. I'm excited. What does it look like and feel like in terms of, you know, experiencing the gaming, the Internet of Things? in my mind, whenever I think of that, I always think of like, hey Siri, close my curtains. But
actually we have an example like that.
Really?
You must go to the Morningside store, I promise you. I think one of the, what I really like, because I'm a mom, when you go there, you'll experience security system where you can actually open your security gate from your cell phone. From your device, you just press and then your security opens the exactly what you're talking about, where you can close your curtains, where you can use vacuum cleaners just rotating around, where you can get onto digital bicycles, where you get on it, you sit in there, but it feels like you're actually on the road. So there's actually quite a lot.
That is so interesting, especially for cuts across right across the experiences we have, right? Whether it's health and fitness, your home and security, but of course also making sure that you can access all the tools that you really like. I'm really keen as well if we do take a look at the biometric facial authentication, because I understand that that's a bold move that you participated in. We're used to it when it comes to our cell phone devices, but how has this impacted security as well as to minimize any key data breaches that we know have grown in terms of prevalence these days?
So as MTN South Africa, we recognize that in South Africa there's quite a lot of identity theft. So it was quite imperative for us to protect our customers. So we actually the only network operator in the country that is using facial biometrics. Connected to the Home Affairs. What is great about it is that we have technologies that allow us to even connect to the Home Affairs if it's offline. So we are able to do that. We're really excited because it's all about making sure that we protect our customers. Our customers can actually get to trust our brand even more.
I'm assuming that actually applies right across the spectrum, just to heighten security, make sure that we get the right authorizations and details across. This speaks to innovative solutions that MTN has implemented, and we are seeing this growing right across the industry. But how do we make sure it reaches so many more South Africans? Because someone might say, Morningside, yeah, you know, we are part of the upper echelon and based in Johannesburg, so we've got access to these services. But for Rakhadi and Rakharangua, someone, I don't know, MJZ or anywhere else across the country, how do they get access to some of these facilities?
So what we pride ourselves with at MTN South Africa is that we have stores across the entire South Africa. I mean, if you go to Soshanguve, Lusikisiki, all those areas, Lebowahomo, we have stores in those areas to make sure that we are actually reaching all the different customer profiles from low income all the way to high income. What we have also done, because we realize that we're moving into the era of 5G.
Yes.
You know, which, I mean, at MTN South Africa, we're proud that we are giving our customers 5G services. But what we realized was that we actually have a number of customers who are still using 2G and 3G devices. And you can imagine that if you're using a 2G device, you are not able to learn online. You are not able to speak to, you know, your kids if they are in Gauteng or if they are in Western Cape or if they are in KZN. You need to do WhatsApp calls. So what we have done is we have introduced a program called Smartphone for All. So we're basically democratizing smartphones. Everyone must have a smartphone. So for only 99 rands, you can go to any MTN store, and then we have a list of customers. Obviously, it's not for everyone, because otherwise even people who have 5G devices will be going to the stores. We know who are the customers who are on 2G and 3G devices.
So it's according to your affordability.
According to what you use, because remember, we are able to see the type of device that you use. So we have a list of customers whom we've already sent SMSs to. So those customers, they go to the stores and get a smartphone for only 99 rands. And the only reason we're doing this is we just want to make sure that we're closing the digital divide.
Yes.
We want to make sure that every single customer, you know, what we say at MTN is that everyone deserves the benefits of a modern connected life.
100%.
So that's what we are doing to the South Africans.
Yeah, I was waiting for my SMS, but oh well. I get why. Mengena, this has really been an opportunity for MTN to, you know, profile its work, showcase how it is bridging the digital divide in South Africa, not only through the heavy investment that you've made when it comes to the capital infrastructure and the networks, but also in making sure that the final end device that we use as South Africans also does give us an opportunity to connect to the world, essentially through technology. As a final message to MTN customers, officially as this particular customer service week does kick off, what's your parting shot to them?
So what we want to appreciate is the feedback that we get from our customers. We are not perfect. We learn from this feedback, either on social media, whether you contact us via our call centers. We are here to listen. So what we say to our customers is that we listen, we care, and we make moves. We are here for you, and we really appreciate you putting the trust in us.
Awesome. Such a pleasure speaking to you, and we're looking forward to seeing how the week does go. But beyond that, also sustaining this into the long term to continue to see MTN growing as a brand in South Africa that's well known and respected. And that experience store, I am coming.
You must come. You must definitely go. You're missing out, hey, if you haven't been. Sure.
Am I?
Yes.
Myself and the listeners.
Yes.
Well, that's where we leave it for today. A big thank you to my guest tonight, Mengena Rangu, General Manager for Branded Retail and Business Experience Hubs at MTN South Africa.
Kaya Biz. Monday to Thursday, 6 to 8 p.m. Kaya 959. On the street. On the air. On the air. On the air.
16 minutes after 7 o'clock, you're listening to Kaya Biz here on Kaya 959 with myself, Kukuletu Mfupi. Lots on the agenda, and as you can tell, we're speaking to big companies who have key messages that they'd like to share with you. So much so that we have key partnerships that have been established with them. So do get in touch, share your views, your thoughts, and your feedback. But I have a big question for you, and this is where I'm hoping to hear from you. Your voice notes, your questions, your thoughts. At Dumza, Titi Malindi, Mobulawa, who else? Do share your voice notes, because this is typically the kind of conversations that we love to have here on the show, especially when it comes to the world of work. Many of us are in a role and a function where we have to show up between 40 hours a day for our corporate companies that we happen to serve or the businesses that we do run. But there has been a significant ruling that's been made by the Constitutional Court, which has redefined parental leave. And there's key implications for not only employers, but also employees and professionals. Tonight on Careers Corner, we are getting ready to have a key conversation in understanding what the limitations, responsibilities, rights are, and several changes that we need to be mindful of.
Show us the money. Kaya Biz. On the street. On the air. Careers Corner. On Kaya Biz.
17 minutes now after 7 o'clock, you're listening to Kaya Biz here on Kaya 959. Careers Corner. I'm in conversation with Leila Musa, Senior Associate of the Employment Practice at Cliff Decker Hofmeyr, also referred to as CDH. We're talking about the Constitutional Court redefining parental leave and the implications it has for employers and professionals. Leila, welcome to Kaya Biz. Thank you for your time. Oh, Leila, it seems as though your mic is on mute, so we're going to try to get you back up. There we go. Welcome to Kaya Biz.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Fantastic. Excited to speak to you this evening around a topic that really does not only have socioeconomic consequences, but even economic consequences for the businesses that they're involved in from a legal point of view. But maybe give us a refresher on the ruling that took place at the Constitutional Court. What's the background? What motivated the shift, and what does this new landmark proposal mean?
Right. Thanks very much for having me, Gugu. So really interesting changes that we're seeing off the back of the Constitutional Court's judgment that was handed down on Friday in the matter that involved the Van Wyks and various other parties. So just by summary, for people who haven't been following the matter, essentially, it was brought by a married couple, the Van Wyks, who challenged the maternity leave and parental leave benefits in terms of the BCEA on the basis that it was unconstitutional. And really, to sum it up, the reasoning for that was due to their particular circumstances, and which would impact other couples and even single parent households in different ways. They found that where Ms. Van Wyk was someone who had her own business, whereas Mr. Van Wyk was employed, the argument was along the lines that it impacted their dignity in that their child was not able to have the benefit of a parental leave benefit for a full 4 months, where Mr. Van Wyk was someone who was employed and able to take that benefit. So what we saw happen on Friday was that the Constitutional Court confirmed the earlier order of the High Court. And effectively, what they said there was that all parents, regardless of their gender or their birthing status, and when I say birthing status, I mean whether they're a birthing couple or a couple that's adopting or a couple that is a commissioning parent as part of a surrogacy agreement. So all of those categories of parents are entitled to the full period of parental leave, which is 4 months and 10 days. Whereas previously we saw a longer period that was permitted for birthing mothers with maternity leave, as opposed to the other types of leave.
Mm-hmm. This is so important because it really does shift the lay of the landscape, right? Essentially providing a level of equity or universal parental leave. But help us contextualize. Does this essentially mean that this now forms part of basic labor law?
Absolutely. So the impact of Friday's decision was for the court to do what we call in law reading in. So they read into our current Basic Conditions of Employment Act with immediate effect the statutory provisions that allow all parents, as I've said, to take that full period of parental leave. And they've also, together with that immediate reading in, given Parliament 36 months, so a period of 3 years, in order to now amend the legislation itself to align with the order of constitutional invalidity.
Mm-hmm. And maybe this is also where we need to talk about the impact it has then on employers. So for anyone who might be working for a corporate company or even myself here at Kaya, how then do businesses need to implement this new particular policy and structure?
Yes, so the first thing there is just what the actual impact is. So where you are persons who are employed and you are entitled to take your parental leave. If you're a single parent, you're entitled to that full portion of parental leave, right? Which is the four months and 10 days. And if you are two parents who are employed, you as a couple are entitled collectively to the 4 months and 10 days. Now, this is where it gets quite interesting, is that you can either choose as a couple to take that parental leave consecutively, or you can take it concurrently. Oh. Provided that what you're taking collectively is the 4 months and 10 days. Yeah, very interesting. And the proviso on that is that we as a couple, you have a birthing mother, they may not, as a birthing mother, just from a health perspective, they may not return to work within the first 6 weeks after their birth. So there's just a preference on that first 6 week portion where the birthing mom, in the case of heterosexual or birthing couples, mm-hmm. That would be, you know, for the birthing mom to take those 6 weeks. But the balance of that, it's up to the couple to decide by agreement how they then split the leave, if they choose to split it at all. And if they don't agree, then what the statute then says, or the reading in remedy for now, is that it must be taken as equitably as possible. So split down the middle insofar as possible.
Leila, we've so, got you.
Yeah. No, so I was going to say what employers then, what they then have to do is think about, well, this needs to, they need to make provision for this within their employment landscape, right? And as because it's a basic condition of employment, as of Friday, any parental couple would have the right to take this leave. Now, whether or not that leave is something that's a paid benefit, that's a matter of the employer's particular policies or contractual benefits. But what does need to be done now is that employers need to ensure, in order to comply with what the court has handed down on Friday, that any parental couple is entitled to collectively take that 4 months and 10-day period.
Let's stick to the benefits for a moment before we talk about couples versus single parents. So those benefits, as you say, would then be, you can take the time off, you're entitled to 4 months and 10 days, but how you might be remunerated or offered any kind of support for it is between you and the company itself, or what the company actually might offer in terms of your contractual agreement.
That is correct. So what the Basic Conditions of Employment Act provides for is the leave itself. So it says that you're permitted to take that time off work. Whether or not that is paid is something, as you've correctly stated, that would be a benefit that would arise out of your employment. Now, people who where it's typically unpaid, persons would then be entitled to claim from the UIF in terms of that separate maternity benefit. And I know you're going to ask me now what happens to that.
Yes.
And it's very important to note that as of Friday's judgment, the court declined to actually read into the particular provisions of the UIA Act and into UIF benefits, as sufficient information on those particular benefits were not before the court in order for it to do that with immediate effect. Mm. But I think to sum it up, where we are is that you're allowed the time off, but it is unpaid unless your employer contractually or in terms of its policy provides you with a more favorable benefit and pays you for the full or a portion thereof.
Oh, all my friends in corporate must be smiling right now, because typically they do have very favorable benefits. A key theme that we mentioned, Leila, in our conversation is couples. And that's come up regarding, you know, whether heterosexual as couples or same-sex couples that might be in a relationship or having a child. What about single mothers or single parents? Let me put it that way, because we also know that men can also adopt or actually ask a surrogate to give birth to their children. So what happens in light of a single employed parent? What happens there?
Yeah. So the single employed parent, irrespective of what their birthing status is, as you've correctly pointed out, they would be entitled to that full 4 months and 10 days. So there is no differentiation or discrimination in how the benefit is applied, whether one is single or part of a unit, whatever that unit looks like. And the important basis for that is, as the court reasoned, it's the nurturing period for the child that is key, right? So because a child being born into a family or adopted into a family comes into a particular type of family, they should not receive more or less of that nurturing time with the parent or parents. Mm-hmm. And that's what was key.
Got you. Okay, that does make a lot more sense in terms of the process within which it's managed. But let's focus on adoption, because I believe that there were certain limitations on age. And the truth is, adoption can take place either at birth or at different stages of a child's life. What shifts and changes have taken place there since the court ruling?
Yeah, so the previous position was that the adoption benefit applied to adoptive parents adopting children 2 years and below. And that has now changed to say that it can be adopting a child. So we're talking about minors of any age.
Under 18.
And that's a, so that's a significant shift, right? Because it changes how many people that particular adoptive benefit may apply to. And again, that reasoning really resonates and relates to the fact that the best interest of the child and the child's benefit to be nurtured into the home, you know, to adjust to the dynamics of the home, the culture of the home, and just be able to spend time with their parents. That is really what the court focused on and saw as so significantly important for it to change that age limit.
Mm-hmm. As an overview in terms of the shift, though, I guess then, as you say, this took place on Friday. Businesses do need to comply. It forms part of labor law. And employees also need to be mindful of just reassessing their contractual arrangement with the employers to actually understand any additional benefits that they might come or receive, despite the fact that they are entitled now to 4 months and 10 days of maternal or paternal leave. I guess the politically correct way to say it would be parental leave. Would that be correct? I'm just cognizant of making sure that we're fully inclusive.
That's absolutely correct. Yeah, so that's actually what it's called now. So it's just broadly called parental leave. And the old, it was called, you know, Section 25, the maternity leave benefit, has now been replaced with that wording. So now we just speak to parental leave. And as you say, it's with immediate effect. So employers have to act quite quickly and just ensure that they are aligning their policies, and that importantly, if people are applying for leave, that they're ensuring that they're granting it within what is required now by our effectively read-in version of the Basic Conditions of Employment Act.
Leila, I can imagine this means heightened levels of communication, which might or might not happen effectively between employers and employees, which might see you witnessing some interesting cases developing. But in terms of the notification process, whether, you know, for someone who is expectant at the moment, with child or expecting a child, expecting to adopt a child, how do they need to communicate this effectively with the employer? And, you know, what about the employer's responsibility to express this to employees?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think let's start with the employee perspective. So there is a notification requirement, and this did exist before as well with any kind of parental leave or maternity leave that one was taking. And there is a requirement that employees notify their employer in writing of the intended leave days, as well as when you intend to return to work, at least 4 weeks in advance, right? Or 1 month in the case of adoption or commissioning leave. And then there's a proviso, you know, that says unless it's impracticable to do so. But generally, one is required to provide that to your employer. And that's really just so that the employer can ensure that there's planning and that it doesn't come as a surprise. And, you know, from an operational perspective, they can ensure that the relevant processes are in place. And from an employer's perspective, I think really, apart from everything that we're seeing now in the media, I think that employers will be notifying the employees as to how policies are changing and to ensure that employees are complying with the notification requirements in terms of law. And I think just lastly, as an employment lawyer, I would say that it's important for employees or for both sides, actually, of the relationship to just make sure that it is an open line of communication, right? So if one knows that, you know, I'm taking 3 months and my partner's taking a month, you know, ensure that that's properly communicated, because one doesn't want to find yourself in a position where your employer is now without sufficient information. And that perhaps leads to some form of distrust where there's a potential, you know, insinuation that one is now trying to take advantage or take more leave than you're entitled to. And I think that's just an important thing to remember, because it really is a relationship of trust that goes both ways.
100%. Leila, it's going to be an interesting 3 months ahead. I can't wait to get an update from you at the beginning of next year. But thank you so much for your time and making it this so much easier for all of us to understand.
Thanks so much, Google. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Leila Musa, Senior Associate of the Employment Practice at Cliff Decker Hofmeyr, also known as CDH, helping us fully understand the new Constitutional Court ruling that redefines parental leave. So, regardless of your gender, if you are expectant and expecting a child, pregnant or through a surrogate or adoption, there is a universal parental leave. Essentially, all parents, biological, adoptive and commissioning, are now collectively entitled to 4 months and 10 days of parental leave to be shared as they choose. Now, bear in mind that you do have 4 weeks to notify your employer if you do intend to take such leave. Do also be sure that you fully understand and comprehend any additional benefits that might be due to you or non-benefits. The one thing that the law does call for is that you're allowed to take time off 4 months and 10 days to raise your child. However, the benefits in terms of payment, non-payment, or any additional support that you might receive from your place of work is dependent on the employment contract and arrangement that you have with your employer. My friends in corporate, you must be smiling. It's just after 7:30. You're listening to Kaya Biz, but share your views and your thoughts on this one. I'm really intrigued to also hear from entrepreneurs themselves, many who might run small and medium-sized businesses, you know, how you might be looking to view this particular law and regulation. It is effectively law, part of the labor law, so effective immediately. Are you an employer, employee? Share your views and your thoughts with us on universal parental leave.
Click kaya959.co.za
to download the Kaya Biz podcast.